As I've said time and time again, persuade first, negotiate second. Persuasion's when you bring someone up to your point of view. Negotiation's more of a give and take, give and take, give and take. So let's spend time talking about the tools of persuasion, the techniques of persuasion, and later on in this audio, we're going to talk about the tactics, or what I call the dirty deeds, things that old school persuaders will do to you that you need to be aware of so they don't overlap your new school of persuasion and negotiation techniques. They're very manipulative, they're very psychological, but you will see them in the world of negotiation. Just a quick little review of negotiation. It's a discussion to reach an agreement, get past an obstacle. You can find it, of course, to find a win-win. Negotiation is not a time to prove your worth. It's not a time to realize that it's an all-or-nothing situation. It is a time where you can prepare, make everyone happy, and make it a win-win situation. That is a perfect negotiation. The key before any negotiation, whether it be real estate, business, anything. And remember, we negotiate every day, whether it be where to eat for lunch, to real estate, to anything that you do. You need to do what we call a range of acceptance, what I call your win. Before you go into any situation, you need to understand what you want, what you intend, and what you need. That's the win. Want, intend, need. Want is best case scenario. Intend, what you think you'll probably get. And need, you know, is bottom of the barrel. You can't go any lower. And that gives you power and confidence as you go into the negotiation situation. The challenge we are seeing with many negotiators, even professional negotiators, is they negotiate on position instead of finding the problem. Let me explain that a little bit. This is a famous negotiating story about two boys fighting over the last orange, and the mom comes, cuts the orange in half, gives each boy half, thinking she has solved the problem. And maybe she did a little bit, but the one boy peeled the orange and ate the inside. The other boy peeled the orange, threw the inside away, used the outside peel for what he was cooking. Now, if she would have found their positions, what they really wanted, then she could have been a better negotiator in that situation. Because when you find out what their position is, what they really want, what they're really looking for, then you don't get stuck in the problem. For example, real estate. Someone wants $200,000 for their home. Negotiation, real estate's a very emotional issue. $200,000, that is their position. That's what they want. That's what they're negotiating. That's what everyone finds. Well, it's not worth it. When they dig deep and find out, the problem is to get into their next home, they need $200,000 for the home to get enough cash for the down payment. Now, once you understand that, you can find alternatives. You can make the pie bigger. You can change things around. You can have them add their boat to the house. So many different things you can do, and it changes your mindset to find out what is the real issue versus taking the position of price. And that is what most people tend to do. Understand in the negotiation world that there are what I call, like I mentioned earlier, the dirty deeds. These are things I do not want you to do. I do not recommend them. They are not magnetic. When you see them and you're prepared, you'll have a much better feel for how to handle it. Now, some of them aren't really that dirty, I guess. One that you're going to see, I guess, this was probably one you could do if you really wanted to. It's really not that dirty, but it's something you need to be prepared for. It's what we call the flinch. People are trained in old school persuasion. No matter what price, no matter where you start, they're going to flinch. They're going to jump. They're going to give you some type of facial expression. And you can't let that take you off guard. That's just part of the old style persuasion. And again, that one's not that big of a deal. That's just kind of a standard just to kind of see where people are set in their price. People sometimes will heckle you. They'll try to get you to a negative emotion. You must understand. Try to keep the emotion out of it. Always understand you need to be ready to walk. Always understand to stay in control. One of the big ones we see is what we call the higher authority. When someone says, well, I have to talk to my boss. Well, I'd like to, but I can't right now. I might have to need to talk to my spouse. Or, you know, if it were up to me, I would do it in a second. Now, many times this happens because they're trying to buy time or they're looking for concessions. reality is they say, well, I need to talk to the loan committee at the bank, or I need to talk to the tenants, run it by my boss. It's not up to me. They're trying to push the decision away. They're buying time. And when that happens, I want you to be aware that you need to be able to find out who they really need to talk to, if it's a real type of objection or if it's just a knee-jerk situation where they're trying to buy time. Understand that you can say something like, well, who'll be involved in the final decision? Can I set up an appointment to talk to them directly and agree on a deadline? Nobody can persuade or negotiate your business, your real estate, whatever it is, better than you. So try to get into that situation. Try to find out exactly who it is, when they're going to talk to them, and what the deadline's going to be. There's others, what I call the press, where they get right in front of your face and say, well, you'll have to do better than that. Or I must have this, 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 and this, or it's no deal. Or the world famous, and you'll get this, this is old school persuasion. Is that the best you can do? Even if they're ready to accept the offer, they like the offer, they're going to see where you stand by saying, is that the best you can do? And if you've done your range of acceptance or your when you want, what you intend, what you need, you know how to answer that when that comes up. And you should be able to say, yes, it is. Or if you feel like it, you can drop it or raise it a little bit. Now, when people do that and they get in your face, they're trying to set limits, they're getting control. That's kind of standard of many negotiations. Realize, you know, answer a question with a question. When they say something like, is that the best you can do? You could turn around and say, well, how much more do you need? Or, well, what is your basis for saying that? Or why is this so important to you? And we see this with power negotiators. They're answering questions with the questions, and they're keeping control of the conversation. Then you have people that do the famous lowball highball. They'll just come right at you. They'll lowball you. I'm going to pay you $250,000 right now. I'm taking my checkbook out. Take it or leave it. Or they'll say, you must be joking. No, it's worth this much. It's worth well more than that. And you see this in car sales and in real estate quite a bit. Why? Many times they're trying to change your expectations, especially in real estate. You feel your home's worth $300,000 and they come and offer $120,000. Deep down, you realize, you know, where they get the number, is my number way off? So they're trying to change expectations. They're trying to intimidate you, and they're trying to get you to rethink your position. So when somebody does something like that, you ask them, what is your rationale? What is your standard for that number? Where did you get that? Where are you coming up with that number? And sometimes in the negotiation, when people come at you like that, you just have to smile and laugh. And they're like, okay, all right, whatever. That's nice. Let's really get down to business. Let's go ahead and give me a serious offer. Sometimes you'll see shocking behavior. Now, we like to think we only see this in children, but we do see it in adults, things like temper tantrums or pouting or insults. Yeah, why? These are emotional negotiations many times. The blood leaves the brain, people get angry, and they just do irrational things, very shocking behavior. Sometimes it's on purpose, sometimes they can't handle it. Sometimes they're trying to force a concession or distraction, they're trying to confuse or upset you. You can see anything from storming out to huffing and puffing to personal threats. And when that happens, I like to ignore it. Use a little silence. Wait a few seconds or minutes if you need to and resume. Or you could say something like, I see what's happening. However, or you just say, just be blunt. Well, do we need a break? Is it a good time for a break? One you'll see is the nibble. And this is usually towards the end of the negotiation, where they'll say, well, great, it's a done deal, let's do it. Can you include this, this, and this? If it was a home, the piano, the boat, and all the lawn mowing equipment. But what about adding painting the exterior of the house? It's a deal provided you leave all the furniture to your business. It's a deal provided you. So what they're doing is they're getting you close. What's happening is, and why they do this, it's a last-minute concession. They're catching you off guard, and sometimes they'll make you feel stupid or cheap. Well, you mean we come this far, and you won't throw in this, this, and this? They're nibbling. They're trying to see what you'll throw in. They've already made a decision to do that. They just see what extras they can get. When that happens, you can play back the authority. You don't have the authority to do that if it's with a company. Or you could say something like, are you joking? You just got an incredible deal if they're trying to make you feel cheap or stupid. But my favorite is nibble back. Well, sure, I'd love to throw in this and this if you'll throw in this, this, and this. So nibble back. Pretty simple. Now, one very similar to the nibble is what they call the add-on. The add-on's different because it's deceptive and it's a lie. So you're finishing your negotiation and they say something like, you did say that was included, didn't you? So, the insurance is included, right? I understand that the piano comes with the house, doesn't it? They're fishing, they're greedy, they're trying to get whatever they can, and it's very deceptive, to tell you the truth. Now, when you sense them doing that, you have to really think to yourself, with any of these dirty deeds, you have to ask yourself, do I want to finish this negotiation? Is this a one-time negotiation that I'll never see this person again? Or are we going to negotiate a lot throughout our lifetime? So you need to decide when to walk and if it's something that you want to be put through. So if they're doing an add-on, you could say something, well, we'd have to go back to the beginning to address that. They say, no, oh, sorry, you misunderstood. Or you just bluntly say, look, the price I offered that we negotiated includes the following list. Calm, cool, collected. They might try to trigger your emotions through what they call a pity play. Well, my wife is pregnant, my car needs a transmission, my mother is bedridden, my pinky toe hurts, whatever it is, they're trying to make their problem your problem. Or do you want to be known as the person who did this, this, and this to us? Don't make their problem your problem. They're trying to invoke sympathy, they might threaten you with a bad publicity, and you say something like, I'm sorry, I can understand how you feel, however, or understand that through questions you can help them realize that this is not your problem, it is their problem. And if you watch any of the movies or TV shows, you've heard the world famous good cop, bad cop. And yes, you will see it. If you negotiate, you'll see it. You'll have two people around the table, and one of them will say, probably use profanity, they'll yell at you, they'll say something like, I know where you live, you're lying to me, I don't want to be part of this game. And when this happens, very old school, it's planned out ahead of time, they're trying to intimidate you, and when you can see it a mile away, when you know it's coming, my favorite thing to do is to identify the tactic. You say something like, this isn't good cop, bad cop, is it? You guys doing good cop, bad cop? Because that went out a long time ago. And they'll deny it usually and say, no, no, he's just upset. He'll be back soon. You can use silence or just say, wow, you know, where's the solution here? You're staying calm. You're not letting it get to you. You'll see some people, just like the pity play, do an emotional jab. Well, they'll just get mad. It's so upsetting I could scream. I'm so humiliated you would offer that. Do you think I'm a moron? And they're jabbing, trying to get emotions out of you. They're trying to catch you off guard. They're trying to bypass your logical mind. Many negotiators try to trigger those emotions because when you trigger those emotions, many people do act irrationally. And so, be the professional. They're upset. They could scream. You made a bad offer. Whatever it is, just own up to it and say, I apologize. That was not my intent. Or, wow, I'm surprised you're upset. Can you tell me exactly what's making you upset so we can talk about it? Important information. Then, of course, there's the intimidation. Be ready for this. You'll see this quite a bit, especially with banks and loan officers, and when you're going to their home turf. So you're coming at 10 o'clock for the negotiation, and the secretary says, or the assistant says, go ahead and sit down. Mr. So-and-so is not ready. Mrs. So-and-so is not ready. We'll call you when they're ready. It's a power play. They don't have that many tools. Or they might even invite you into their office and say, go ahead and sit down. I have three more calls to make. Or thanks for coming. Have a seat. I just have three or four more people I need to talk to out of the office. Just go ahead and sit here. You need to decide right then and there, are you going to call it? Say, well, we had a 10 o'clock appointment. I'm very busy. Do we need to reschedule? Or for most people, we suggest, just take it, study, prepare, let them know what they're doing, and don't let it bother you. Endure it, use it as prep time, or say something like, well, I'm very busy, do we need to reschedule? You have many aggressive negotiators that'll get in your face, especially if they sense any fear from you or sense that you really don't know what you're doing. That's why the preparation is so important. They come right at you and says, what is your final price? Give me your best deal. Let's cut to the chase. I don't have a lot of time. Give me your best offer right now. Those are the first words out of their mouth. They do that because they're aggressive, and they also do that because they want you to throw out the first number. So remember, I've talked about earlier, you answer a question with the question. So if they say, what is your final price? Don't throw out a number. You say, what price are you looking for? Or you say, if they come to you and say something like, well, give me your best deal. And they say, well, make me an offer. Or you could, if they're right in your face, you can say something like, whoa, 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 you skipped a turn. This is a negotiation. Let me tell you how it works. You make an offer, then I make an offer, and kind of do that with a smile, just to see and let them know that it's not getting to you. Sometimes you could get the ultimatum. They come up to you and say, if you can't accept this term, right here, the deal is off. Now, this is usually after some time of negotiation. Why do they do this? Creates tension. It's intimidating. Maybe they feel like they've lost control. Or they'll say something like, if you want my business, you will. If you'll do this, this, and this, that's my final offer. And realize it's because they've been negotiating for a while and they're feeling they're not getting anywhere and this is their final offer. They're just trying to pretty much almost give up and throw it out at you. So depending on the situation, you can't ignore it if you know that they're going to continue to negotiate. Or you ask the question, well, why do you need this? Why it's so important about having this? Or the famous, help me understand the standard you're using. You're asking for 25 cents a unit. Where are you getting that number? Non-emotional, calm, connecting with people, developing trust are all very important in this situation too. Then, of course, there's the psychological mind game. Yes, adults do this. You look terrible. Were you up all night? Or they'll attack you. They'll attack your ideas. They'll laugh at you. They'll make fun of you. They might try to negotiate early in the morning or late at night. There'll be a lot of noise. They'll smoke in a non-smoking room. They'll turn the temperature up so everybody's miserable. It's just psychological abuse. It's unethical. It's unpleasant. It's always one-sided. And just know that when people do that, it's a win-lose mentality, and they're just trying to play a psychological game, trying to treat you like you're stupid, like they can blow smoke in your face or do different things to you that will subconsciously or consciously make you feel inferior. Things like, for example, making you sit in the sun, so the sun's shining in your face, or buying lunch for everyone but you, or cutting the legs off the chair so they're a little shorter, so you're a little shorter than everyone else. Yes, this happens. This is another situation where you probably want to identify the tactic. Or you can say something like, well, what's the philosophy behind me sitting in the sun? Or can you tell me why my chair is 3 inches shorter than everyone else's? Or can we switch chairs tomorrow? Just call attention to it and call their bluff. And if it gets really bad, remember, you can walk. Then sometimes we'll see what we call the phony offer. Careful of this one. Let's use a real estate example here. They'll come up to you and say, well, great, let's seal the deal. I'll take it. It's a done deal in your mind. So they've tied up the property. Mentally, you've sold it. You're not returning phone calls to other people that are interested. You quit trying to sell it. Why do people do it? It's very deceitful and it's very short term because they know that mentally you've sold it, and once that happens, things change in your mind. Now, if that happens to you, you can do a large non-refundable deposit. You could write the contract and just understand what they're trying to do is mentally tie it up, even though they're probably not going to do it. And there's a lot of reasons they could do that. Just understand that if that happens, you're always talking to the interest party. You're always writing down people that are interested, because you never know if this deal is going to go through or not. Then you have the decoy, or what they also call the red herring, where they'll say something like, can you close this month? We want to close this month. Can you do it this month? In the reality, they're looking at price, or you need to paint the house. They might be looking at the date they can move in, or what they call the front porch theory, where they leave something out for you to notice, to get you upset, like maybe trash or something that's unpainted, something that you'll find, say, hey, we need to get that fixed, hiding something else. It's a distraction. It's a cover-up. So when that happens, if you come to the front porch and they leave obvious things for you to find, many times there's other things in a real estate situation, for example, or even walking into a business or anything, you're looking for the true decoy. Or you can say something like, if they say, can you close this month? Say, well, is this your only issue? You're looking to close right now and keep the power in your court. Then, of course, there is the price punch where they go after you. They do this because of time and because of ego. Your goal in this situation when you're negotiating and fighting over price is looking for ways to increase the pie. How can you make the pie bigger and better? What can you add to make it a win-win situation? And everything you do is so important that you understand that. So if people come back to you again, is that the best you can do? Like we mentioned earlier, what is your highest offer? What is your best offer? Or someone says, that price is 25% higher than I researched. Remember, you're calm, you're collected, you've done your research. Again, you throw back, and what is your best offer? Or, wow, you know, really, what did you expect to invest? Is price your only concern? And you have to be ready when the number hits, you say, that is the best I can do. Similar to some other tactics, but a little different. And it's important you understand each one of these. Or they'll come right after you. They're tired. They're done negotiating. And they're going to say, final offer. I'm leaving right now. Take it or leave it. If you don't accept this offer in the next week, we will not be doing business together. That you will see. And it's important that you listen to the words they use and remember your win. Your high number, your want, your medium number, what you intend, and your low number, your N, stands for win. And remember, when that happens, they're fed up, they're tired, it's not going as well, they're frustrated. Now remember, frustration comes from an unmet expectation. That is frustration. So one thing you can do is change some of the expectations, find out what's frustrating them, remind them why you're there and what could be lost, and introduce a new solution. Take a break or do some other things in this type of a situation. Then you have the old famous split the difference. And a lot of negotiators will do this. If you're close, you'll just, well, let's split the difference. So if you're at 100,000 and they're at 90,000, they'll say, all right, let's split the difference. And then you do it for 95. And it could be a great technique that you can use. But be careful. Some will try something like this. You know, you want 100,000. And they want 80,000. They say, okay, let's meet in the middle. Let's split the difference 90,000. And then they keep going and they say, well, okay, great. Since we're agreeing at 90,000, I'm at 80,000. How about 85,000? It's a bait and switch. And they say, no, we've already split the difference. Yeah, you agreed to 90,000. I'm at 80,000. How about 85,000? They'll go back and forth and they will pretend that they don't understand what you're talking about. And just let them know, whoa, that's the oldest trick in the book. Or you say, no, let me explain, split the difference. Or you just say, I can't believe you're using that tactic. I just can't believe it. Then there's the famous what if. Well, what if I paid cash today? What if we tripled the order? What if I could close on the house by the end of the month? Many times when they do this, they're fishing and they're looking for quick concessions. They're just saying that. Well, what if I paid cash today? And you might say something like, well, then we could do it for $20,000. They say, well, we don't have the cash, but I like the price, $20,000, let's do it. You've thrown out a price, and for many times and for many people, it's too late. Say something like, is this a hypothetical question? Are you ready to pay cash right now? Or are you willing to place a large order? Well, what if I did a lower price? Are you ready to order today? Find out exactly where they stand. Another is the bait and switch, where they decide on a price. Let's do real estate again. That's easy for most people to understand. You decide on a price of $200,000. It's a done deal. Again, mentally, you're done. They come back the next day, and they say, well, I could only get a check for $95,000. That's all we could get. I tried. I'm sorry. I know I said $100,000. This is what I have, is a check for $95,000. They're playing you. It's very dishonest. It's a certified check. You're like, well, you know, and you have to decide at that moment, are you going to take it or not? They're playing you. It still might be a good deal for you, but they are definitely playing you. Call their bluff. maybe take it and say, okay, get the rest of 5,000. It's a done deal. Restart the negotiation. Or if they're doing something that dirty, you might just want to walk. And that's the reality when you look at the world of negotiation. I don't want you to do these. I just want you to be aware that they're happening. Knowledge is power in this situation, and it won't catch you off guard. Another great tool of negotiators is understanding personality directions. Do your research. Now, people have different styles, and different styles resonate and hate other styles. Now, your style could come from personality, from your experiences, from your education, from your family, from your culture, a lot of different places. Understand, though, just on the basic level, most people are either logical or emotional. Logical people are very different than emotional people. We all have both, but we all tend to spend more time in one area than the other as we go through these. Logical people, they use their heads. They love facts and statistics. They want to know about the past history, and they're using their five senses. And of course, the opposite, realize that a logical person is very different than an emotional person, because a logical person wants the facts. The emotional person wants to do what feels right. They use their heart. They're swayed by emotion. They follow their intuition, and they kind of have what we call this sixth sense. Then on the other side, you have the introverted versus the extroverted. The extroverts love to communicate. They involve others. They're public people. They love to meet face-to-face. They want to do lunch. They're very talkative. Versus the introverts keep their feelings inside. They're great listeners. They work alone, and they probably would rather receive a memo or an email. So very different ways that you would negotiate with this type of person. Logical or emotional, introvert or extrovert. And another one is inspiration or desperation. How are they motivated? And that's important to understand. Desperation, you're getting away from something. You're stuck in the past. You're avoiding some pain or punishment, and you're worried about something. Versus inspiration, you're moving towards something. There's hope of the future. You're motivated by reward. You just have this vision. And you have to know, if you ever try to motivate somebody that's an inspiration mindset with desperation, they will get rid of you every time. Then we have the assertive type versus the amiable type. The assertive, results over relationships. Quick decisions, in control, doesn't waste any time. Versus, of course, the amiable. The relationship's what's important. Friendly, loyal, great listeners, and avoids contention. So, with that in mind, understand when you deal with different types of people, different types of negotiators, you're going to do some things differently. When you deal with an aggressive negotiator, they're very arrogant, they're very confrontational, it's a win-lose. They don't care that much about you, and they don't care much about the relationship. And when you see that happening, great negotiators can adjust. In that type of situation, you want to focus on the issues, find alternative solutions, stay composed, and let them know that you can walk. And when you're with someone that's that aggressive, don't treat it like a war. Don't get defensive. Don't back them in a corner. And don't ever let them see you get intimidated, because then they'll take you all the way to the bank. Then you have soft negotiators. They're outgoing, they're friendly, they're looking for a win-win, they love relationships. Now you need to spend time on the relationship with more social validation and testimonials. You need to be open and warm and find some type of common interest. One thing you would never do is rush, use small talk, just throw all these facts and figures at them and be all business. Now, probably the person that you deal with many times is the professional. It's what they do for a living. They're calm and composed. They want to succeed. That's first. The relationship is secondary. And as you go through this process, be professional. Be prepared. Have your facts. Get to the point. This is what they do for a living. You never want to be disorganized. You never want to guess or use estimations or waste their time or be too friendly with a professional negotiator. And then one, two, especially if you're doing real estate, is the rookie. They don't do much negotiation. They're hopeful and curious that everything will turn out. They want to win, but they're so concerned that people will take advantage of them. And that type of relationship really needs to be earned. So in a situation like that where they don't negotiate much, share every step. Show them where you got your standard, where you got your number from. Paint their picture for them. Use testimonials. And never use any threats. And don't assume they understand all the steps. Don't be condescending. And don't be all business. It's all part of rapport and the law of connectivity as we talked about in Maximum Influence. So if you really want to know what type of person they are, you can ask them things like, well, what did you like about a seminar? What did you like about your last book? What did you like about the sales presentation? Because it's interesting and it's amazing what people say. You'll hear things like, well, I needed more meat. Or it was all rah-rah. Or what are their qualifications? Or they were a down-to-earth person. Or where did their facts come from? Oh, they seemed like a nice person. Little things like that, you can tell through those exactly where they resonate in those charts. A few other red flags I want to throw at you is things you might think are things usually towards the end of the negotiation where they'll say something like, before I forget, or by the way, or things like, I'll try my best. Well, it's none of my business, but I need to ask this question. Or what would happen if I did this, this, and this? Or they say something like, okay, honestly. Now, you got to be careful that you should never say that because, what, you're being dishonest to that point? Or they say something like, well, we'll work out the details later. Those are some pretty big red flags that you need to be aware of. You also have different types of negotiation tools that you can use. As we study great negotiators, they're physically prepared. They've slept. As Vince Lombardi says, fatigue makes cowards of us all. Mentally prepare. You've seen it. You see them ask all the questions. You've gone through it in your mind. You remember to always persuade first and negotiate second. That great persuaders discover and persuade and negotiate with questions. You always need to start high. You want to review the law of contrast. You want to create your win. That's your range of acceptance, what you want, what you intend, and what you need. And focus on building value and not just fighting over price. And remember with concessions, I'll give you this, I want this, this, and this. Try to let them make the first offer. And if they're asking for something, you should reciprocate and ask for something back. And do it in small increments and make them work for it. And find the concessions that don't mean that much to you. Or you might have to say things like, I'll consider it. But understand human nature. Someone comes up to you to buy, let's say, your car. And you're willing to sell it for $8,000. And somebody comes up to you and says, oh, wow, how much is your car? Oh, and you say, $8,000. They say, I'll take it. Oh, great deal. And then let's sign the papers right now. Now, you're probably glad you sold your car, but you're thinking, well, I could have done better. Maybe it's worth more. Is there something I missed? And on the flip side, you offer somebody $10,000 for something and they take it right away. Human nature is going to say, well, wait a minute. So you want to make them work for it because it'll work much better in the long run for lack of dissonance and lack of buyer's remorse. So watch your concessions. Use deadlines. This is the law of scarcity. Human nature. You don't have a deadline, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. That's just what we need. You say, look, this option expires here. This contract goes up here. This offer's good for 10 days. I can hold this for 2 months. You have to put a deadline on it because if you give someone 3 months to make a decision, they're going to take 3 months to make that decision. Know ahead of time what that's going to be. And understand, too, everyone that's been to negotiation training one-on-one has heard the phrase, the first one to talk loses. What that means is once you make an offer and you put it out there, that you're supposed to be silent, no matter how long it is. The challenge we're noticing is that if people have been in the same school, nobody talks and they just sit there for probably hours at a time. Now, it's probably not that long, but it seems that long. So you could still be professional. That's kind of an old school thing. And just say, wow, what exactly are you thinking about? Or do you need additional information? Or is there something else you want to discuss if the silence is getting too long? And always clarify with questions. You're listening. You're the consultant. You're listening with your heart, with your eyes, and with your mind. Say, did I understand? Let me see if I follow. Let me try to explain. Because the first time they try to explain it might not be exactly what they mean. So as you go out there in the real world, some just basic tips again. Repetition increases acceptance. Repeat throughout your presentation. Always solve the easy issues first. Get a pattern. Get it going. Get the relationship. Always focus on the positive first before the negative. Never say yes to that first offer, like I mentioned. And use what we call the set-aside technique. If you're stuck on something and you can't get past it, say, well, let's set that aside for now and we'll come back to that and try to find an issue that you can solve. Understand that you might lose a few battles, but the goal, of course, is to win the war. I hate to use that analogy, but that's what you need to understand. Avoid unnecessary humor and realize that they need to realize that if it doesn't work, you're more than willing to walk. And never in a situation negotiation say things like, oh, you wouldn't understand, or, well, that's none of your business. What are these things to people? You would understand. Is that implying they're kind of stupid, or calm down is implying they're kind of out of control, or what's your problem, or why don't you be reasonable says other things about them. So you really got to watch your verbal packaging. It's another law of persuasion. And as you go through negotiation or persuasion or sales or anything you can do, be professional. I believe this with all my heart. This is so important that you do this. After any situation, persuasion, negotiation, sales, whatever, you're always asking yourself, okay, what did I do well? And reinforce that. What could I do better? And find a solution to fix it. What's the next step? You know, what should I do next time? What, did I build trust? Did the laws work? And that's why we've developed a pre-persuasion checklist. Those are questions that you go through that you should set up before you start any negotiation. Preparation is one of the big keys to great negotiation. So learn these principles. Understand how to become a great persuader. Understand the mindset, the emotional needs of the people that you talk to. And I guarantee you, as you implement these, you try these and you use these, you will become a perfect negotiator.